You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. Today I'm going to be covering a story that's breaking, and it's been in the news in the last over a year, but it's really had a major development today, and that is the announcement that the United States Army will be charging Sergeant Robert Birdall, Bo Birdall, with desertion and misbehavior. Now, I need to say that I'm a son of a professional soldier who trained our combat personnel for World War II. Now, my father is deceased, but he was of the World War II generation, and he served with both honor and distinction for over 23 years and several wars. And that is multiplied by millions of people of all services, whether it's the U.S. Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, men and women. Many of them volunteers, many of them were drafted, and they serve their country. Now, myself, I volunteered to serve in the Air Force. I wanted to be a fighter pilot, and I applied for the Air Force Academy and had an appointment, but my problem was I did not pass the physical because of my eyesight. Between my junior and senior year, my eyesight really got bad, and at that point in time, they wanted 20/20 eyesight because all the people that went to the Air Force Academy usually became pilots. So I did not go to the Air Force Academy, and that was my goal throughout high school. I could have gone to West Point, but decided no, I really wanted to go in the Air Force, did not want to go to West Point. But I still went through Reserve Officer Training, ROTC, at New York University, was commissioned as a second lieutenant, and served for a total of 5 years in the United States Air Force. All were at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio, on the F-15 Systems Program Office, where I served both in the Contracts Division and the Financial Management Division, and was promoted to captain, as well as given a regular commission. But at the end of 5 years, over 5 years, I decided to seek a career in private industry. Now, I'm giving you that background for a reason. I think the response to this story will very much depend on your background and your family's background and whether or not you've served in the military. Because I come from a military family, and have, like many people, I was an Army brat, and we moved around a lot. I spent 3 years, again, my mom, my brother, and myself spent 3 years in Germany in the 50s, and then we spent 5 years in Taipei, Taiwan. So we moved around a lot, and that's fairly typical of children whose parents are in the military. I wish I had a more stable situation where we were in one place for a long time. That's the one thing I really miss, and that does impact the children of military personnel. But at the same time, I wouldn't trade it for anything, because what I got exposed to at a very young age is the need to make friends, because usually within a year or two, you're going to be moving. So I got to see a lot of Germany, a lot of Taiwan, and a lot of the United States. We moved in the United States primarily from New York to New Jersey because my father's last duty station was Fort Monmouth. Again, we were involved in training. So I give you that as a background, but it's not unique. There are millions of people that have served, are serving, and will be serving that will have differences of experience. I clearly never served in combat, and that was just the nature. If you're in the military, you go where you're ordered. I went to an assignment I knew nothing about, and it wasn't my choice at all. And that's important to understand. People, whether they're drafted or volunteer, While the military tries to accommodate you in terms of what you're looking for, most people, including myself, were ordered to go somewhere that they were just following orders. Now, for me, it worked out fine. I'm having no complaints. But you need to understand that as well. Once you take the oath of office, you have to follow orders. And if you don't follow orders or deliberately disobey orders, you're going to be in trouble. And if it's serious enough, you're going to be court-martialed, tried, and if convicted, found guilty, going to be punished. And that's where we're at. The story involves, at that time, a private stationed in an outpost in Afghanistan, was in a combat situation where the Taliban were trying to kill him. Not only him, but everyone in his unit. So you need to rely on your team and your unit to protect you and you to protect them. That's the situation you're in. It's very much a life and death situation. And like in all wars, you're going to find people through the ranks that have disagreements as to the command abilities of the unit commander. But that's irrelevant. Because when you volunteer, and I believe this soldier did volunteer because the draft has been over for many years, it's understood and should be understood that you're going to be given orders that maybe you don't understand, maybe you don't like, but that's irrelevant. And what's key is to accomplish the mission to the best of your ability and to provide support to your fellow team, whether it's a platoon, a company, whatever it is. Now, this was a remote outpost, and usually what happens is you routinely go on patrol, and when you go on patrol, your enemy is going to try to ambush you, kill you, whether you're doing it on foot or in vehicle, and that's exactly the situation that you had in Afghanistan. Yes, there are many people in Afghanistan that supported us, but the problem was you had religious fanatics, the Taliban, that were engaged in a war with the United States over control as to who would control Afghanistan. And remember, while this was a U.S. Army unit, it was supporting the Afghan army that were also there. Now, one of the problems you have, both in Afghanistan, Iraq, or any other nation abroad, is most of our troops simply do not speak the language. And that is a major problem. Talk to anyone that's been in combat. The need for personnel that understand, in other words, can not only understand, speak, read the language, is a critical skill that's in short supply. So usually what you have is one or more people, in this case the Afghan army, that does speak English as well as the native language and can translate. Now, that's a little background, but I'm trying to set up the story here. We had a private assigned to a remote outpost in Afghanistan, and he made the conscious decision to desert his unit, not abandon the post or go AWO, absent without leave. And remember, this is a remote place in Afghanistan. It's not close... It's not close to India or the United States. And if you go absent without official leave, in other words, you just take off, in a situation like that, your chances are very high that the enemy is going to capture you. And they did. I don't think they captured him. This gentleman defected to the enemy, which is a step beyond desertion. Now, you need to understand how serious desertion is in terms of the military. And this is hard for maybe some people to understand. But other than a soldier turning his own weapons on his own unit, probably the most serious crime that a professional soldier can do is desert. And in time, especially if it's in time of war. And especially if it's in time of war and you're in a combat situation. Now, I don't want to prejudge what now sergeant really should be busted to private. What is going to be said trying to mitigate the circumstances. But in past wars, the penalty for desertion is capital punishment, in other words, execution, either by hanging or firing squad. And that's what George Washington did, the first president and commander-in-chief, both when he served in Virginia, when it was a colony, and as commander-in-chief during the American Revolution, he had to punish deserters. And that depending on the circumstances, many of those deserters were hung or flogged. Desertion was a serious matter because it can lead to mass desertion. So it's a matter for proper order that desertion, especially in a combat situation, is punished severely. And I'm of the opinion that Bo Bergdahl, or Robert Bergdahl, was a deserter, most likely a defector, and deserves to be executed. I will leave that up to the Army to decide whether he's guilty or not and what the punishment should be. But if I were to serve on that court-martial and the evidence was clear that he deserted and more likely defected and gave the enemy information, and there's some evidence that he did this, that he should be executed. Now, I know there are a lot of civilians out there, people that have never served in the military, that would find that amazing. You want to execute? Oh, yes, he should be executed. And it's more than just as an example. It's just to emphasize the point, this is not acceptable behavior. This is criminal behavior. This is dishonorable behavior. Now, if you think I'm maybe overreacting, in preparing this show, I had to refresh my memory on what exactly happened, some of the details and specifics. But I pulled up a New York Times article that was online. The title of the article was Bo Bergdahl Charged with Desertion and Misbehavior Before the Enemy. That's a very accurate statement. And this article is written by Helen Cooper. And it's a very brief article. And it summarized some of the key facts here. But then I literally fell out of my seat when I read the last paragraph. And this is the problem. Now, it's fairly clear to me that I don't believe Helen Cooper has ever served in the military. And it's also fairly clear many of the editors of the New York Times have not served in the military. Now, why do I say that? Let me read. I normally don't read anything on my show, but this I'm going to read, and you could pull it up and read it. It's dated today, March 25th, 2015. And here's what it says. Another question is whether the Army will give Sergeant Bergdahl an honorable discharge if he is found guilty of desertion. For members of the military, an honorable discharge is no small matter, and not getting one can not only hinder a veteran's job prospects, but also weigh on the entirety of how a service member looks back on his or her career. That is a stunning statement of lack of understanding, ignorance, and perspective. Of course he's going to get a dishonorable discharge, not an honorable discharge. And I frankly don't care about his job prospects. The only question in my mind is whether the court-martial, if again, find him guilty, are they going to execute him, which I believe, and I think I speak for a lot in the military, would say he deserves, or whether he gets life. Imprisonment with no possibility of parole. In my mind, if the evidence supports a charge of desertion, and you need to understand something, in the military, usually you have a lot of evidence supporting that before you go forward. It's not lightly done. I'm not saying it's a slam dunk, but if there were a lot of extenuating circumstances, he would have been charged with something a lot less. Desertion is a very serious charge. It's a capital offense if found guilty. Yet we have the New York Times, that liberal rag out of my home state of New York City, or the state of New York out of New York City. I don't know where they... I'm being a little hard on the writer. I write articles, not for the New York Times. But I scratched my head. Where are the editors? Do they have any editors anymore at the New York Times? Maybe not. Apparently not. Because she writes this nonsense. Aren't they supposed to ask questions? I'm assuming this lady went to journalism school, probably went to Columbia or one of the leading journalism schools. Did she ask the people in his unit whether or not he should get an honorable discharge? Are you kidding me? Now, I need to quickly say, well, Ray, what do you think is going to happen? I think he's going to be found guilty. He'll get what I consider a light sentence, maybe 30 years, maybe 20 years, maybe 10. I don't know. And it'll probably serve a few years and then be released. That would be not a good outcome. not a good outcome at all. The Army has thrown the book at them. And it's not easy to do this because there was command pressure brought. Can't prove it. That's speculation on my part. But you better believe they did not want him charged from the White House and President Obama with desertion. So it took a certain amount of courage or guts for the military command to charge him. And I wasn't sure whether they were going to do it. So I salute the people involved in making this decision, because I strongly know, well, I won't say debating whether I should believe or no. There was a thorough investigation at the time that this was going on as to what happened. Because you need to understand something. When someone goes missing in a combat situation like that, you or your commander doesn't know whether he was kidnapped or not. In other words, could the Taliban, under cover of night, broken into that outpost and taken them? Now, that's probably not realistic, but it's a possibility. But when they investigated, they found that, one, prior to this, he sent his valuable personal goods, including a computer, home to his parents. So he was planning this. This was not a spur of the moment. I'm going to take a walk in the countryside. This was deliberate. It was intentional. And that's one of the hard parts of proving desertion. Did the person intend to desert? I think it's clear he did. And if you ask the people that served with him, they all believe that he deserted. Now, what happened as a result of this person deserting? And this is significant. The mission of the people in that unit, as well as in the immediate vicinity and in Afghanistan, changed. The mission became find Private Bergdahl. Now, you're hearing in the news, and I need to correct this, because it's beginning to really annoy me. There's a saying in the military, we don't leave our people behind. And that's a valid saying, and that's what we try to do. We try to recover or wounded or dead, so the enemy does not get them. And that's what our special forces or operators do. But it's true of combat infantry or soldiers, Marine armies. You don't leave your people behind if you, and the only situation you do is when you have no other alternative. So that's true. So because the Army, at least the commanders, were not sure, well, did he desert? Now, the people that he served with clearly think he did. But as commanders, can't assume that. You can't just assume what's maybe or maybe not in a person's mind. And there's always a possibility, even if the probability is close to zero, that the enemy did break in and kidnap him. And even if he did walk off, doesn't mean he went over to the Taliban, but there's more information that subsequently came out when the mission changed to find Private Bergdahl. A lot of resources were dedicated in terms of patrols, helicopter missions, to find Private Bergdahl. And that's what happened in the days and weeks after he left. They never really found him, but they did piece it together that he walked off, went into one or more towns, small towns in the vicinity, and ultimately was captured by the Taliban. And he was in captivity for over 5 years. Now, there are interviews. I need to say this for those that are new to the show. The way you listen to my show is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. At the very top, you'll see my photograph with me in the studio, but right below it you'll see links to my last 60 to 80 shows, and this show will be posted by 10 p.m. today. And below that you'll see some of the material that I looked at or read in preparing this show. In more than one of the videos, the news person interviewed various members of the people that were in the outposts that were part of the team that Bergdahl served with. And one of them is rather stunning. They asked, do you believe Bergdahl deserted? And everyone raised their hand. Everyone. So look at that material, because I think you'll get a better understanding where I'm coming from and where a lot of veterans are coming from, as well as why the Army did this. You know, this is not a simple case of someone going off without having leave, AWOL, absent without official leave, to visit a girlfriend or parents. It's not. And that needs to be clear. It is not. This was in a combat situation, out in the boonies, surrounded by enemy that wants to kill you, where every man in that unit was relying on other members in the unit to protect each another. And periodically, they went on patrol. That's what you do when you're in a combat situation like that. What you don't do is what Bergdahl did. He abandoned his unit. He deserted his unit and went over to the enemy. He defected. And that's a step beyond that. And apparently, he gave him information that made it a lot more effective in the use of IUDs, improvised explosive devices. They're basically bombs that go off either the side of the road or under vehicles. Think of it as like mines. And one of the soldiers says, prior to Bergdahl going off, yes, there were bombs going off when they went on patrol, but sometimes usually they were going off in front of vehicles or on the side of vehicles. But then suddenly they became very accurate. They were going off right under vehicles. And that resulted in the deaths of several of our soldiers. Because there was a concerted effort by the United States Army as well as the Afghan Army to recover and, well, first find and recover Beau or Robert Bergdahl, Private Bergdahl. I'm emphasizing that. Because he was subsequently promoted to sergeant. For the life of me, I don't know why, other than he was gone missing for 5 years. Now, what happened? And I need to be clear about this. When you're in a very hostile situation, any second, any minute, you could die. It could be a mortar shell landing on your position. You can be here now and dead the next second. And people understand that. It also could be a grenade, a rocket-propelled grenade, an RPG. Or you have snipers. Especially if you're officers, that's one. To take out the officers is a high priority. So when you're in a combat situation, that's what's going on. People are getting killed and wounded all the time. That's what I'm trying to say. But as a direct result of focusing a lot of our military resources in finding Beau Bergdahl, and obviously you're going to be looking in the vicinity of around this outpost, in the various towns, as well as roads, and vicinity of it, what do you think the Taliban did? And they did this. They focused their own resources in setting up ambushes and setting up explosive devices, improvised explosive devices, and as a result, a number of our soldiers died. Who are they? Let me read their names, because everyone is hearing about Bergdahl. What you're not hearing about are the soldiers that lost their lives after Bergdahl went missing. Who were they? Private First Class Morris Walker. Staff Sergeant Michael Murphy. Second Lieutenant Darren Andrews. Staff Sergeant Clayton Bowen. Staff Sergeant Curtis. Private First Class Matthew Martinick. Now, in the title for this post, I have all the names. But if you go scroll down, I also have a photograph of those six soldiers. Bowen, Walker, Curtis, Andrews, Murphy, and Martinek. They're all dead. They paid the ultimate price. They went out searching for Private Bergdahl. They knew when they volunteered that they probably were going to go into combat, and some of them were not going to be returning home. Because when you're in a combat situation, you can be perfectly fine one moment, and then because you have an enemy, the Taliban, who wants to kill, wound, and capture you, your situation can suddenly change. And these six professional soldiers lost their lives. And I have a picture of each one of them. Beau Bergdahl, I'm sure, didn't intend for these people to lose their lives, but he simply was not thinking ahead. Had he gave it 1 minute of thought, he would have realized that the United States Army would have went out of its way to try to find out what he had done. He didn't leave a message. There are a lot of clues. He left his body armor, his night goggle vision, his stuff, if you will, military stuff, but he sent all his valuable private gear home. And he had talked. It was clear to the people that he served with that he was not happy being where he was. Didn't think much of the leadership. But he never stopped to think that the Army unlike him, would devote many hours, many days, many months, and really years, trying to find out what happened, where he was, if he were still alive, and try to get him back. Yeah, the army was trying to not leave him in enemy hands. But if Bergdahl had thought about that, he should have thought about the fact that many of his people may be in his own unit or units close by, and if in Afghanistan, were going to be going searching for him. And that was, unfortunately, an opportunity for the enemy, the Taliban, to ambush these various units that went out searching for him. So why you can't directly tie these deaths to him, it's very much a consequence of his decision to desert his unit and apparently give information to the enemy that made it more effective in terms of ambushing his own previous unit as well as others in the vicinity. This is despicable behavior. And I hope this is all brought out in the court-martial in glorious detail. And remember, the Army did an exhaustive investigation why this was happening, and it continued. And that information was passed up the chain of command, and the President should have known about it. And the United States was making an effort to get Bergdahl back, and there were several options being considered as to how to get him back. And one of the options was to trade 5 Taliban commanders that we had captured in Afghanistan that were in Guantanamo in Cuba. And the reason Bo Bergdahl is now alive and in the United States today is 5 Taliban commanders were traded for 1 deserter and most likely a defector. Think about that. Yes, Bo Bergdahl should have been charged and is being charged for desertion and misbehavior. And his court-martial should be covered. And a lot of lessons need to be learned and are being learned as a result of Private Bo Bergdahl's actions in face of the enemy. I think it's fair to say that most in the military applaud the United States Army's action to court-martial. And I hope all the details do come out. And I think if those details do come out, this young man deserves the maximum penalty, the death penalty, because 6 soldiers paid for their lives, either directly or indirectly, as a consequence of Bo Bergdahl's action. Now, I haven't listed the people that have been wounded. Those are just 6 soldiers that were killed. And I frankly think it's irrelevant if Bo Bergdahl was unhappy. Let me make an important point. He didn't have to volunteer. There was no draft. He swore an oath of office to defend, preserve, and protect the Constitution of the United States, like any private or first lieutenant has to swear. I swore that oath of office, as does the President of the United States, and I'm getting to that in a minute. So those in the military, especially those that have served in combat, hope he gets the death penalty. In other words, is executed, most likely by hanging. Do I think that's going to happen? No, I do not. Not in today's environment, and not given the fact that only a small percentage of the United States population has served in the military, a very small percentage. Yes, there are a lot of veterans, and there are many active duty service personnel, but only a small percentage of even them have served in combat. Most do not serve in combat. Only a small percent actually are in combat. And this unit was. And the people that he served with were relying on him. And his actions not only disgraced himself, but resulted in the deaths of several of our soldiers and the wounding of many more. Because the mission over there would not have radically changed had he not deserted. And I'm sure that one or more of those soldiers would most likely be alive today, and many that were wounded would not have been wounded. That's speculation on my part, but that's what I believe, and that's what many in his unit believe, and the people that have served in the military believe. He was a disgrace to his outfit, to his uniform. He betrayed his oath of office. He betrayed his country. He's a deserter, and that's why deserters are usually executed. Not anymore, but that's the problem. Now, what do I think is going to happen? Let's assume for a moment that all the charges and the evidence are brought out in court, and as a result, he's found guilty. What do I think the penalty will be? Or what do I think the end result will be? I think at most he'll serve 5 years in prison, probably at Fort Leavenworth. 5 years. Yes, he was a prisoner for 5 years, so he'll serve another 5 years in prison. It's not going to be a pleasant experience, because the people that are the guards there are military, or at least they were. I don't know today whether most of them are military. It's not going to be an easy 5 years. Not that I have any sympathy for them, because I'm looking right now, staring me in the face, are the five soldiers who were killed. And remember, they all had families, they all had loved ones, they had children, but they honored their oath of office and went out looking for them, not really knowing what really happened. They might have had suspicions. And yes, we don't leave, if at all possible, our fellow soldiers behind. That's a true statement. But when it became more or less known that he had deserted, what we don't do is trade one deserter for five enemy Taliban commanders. So yes, the young man made a very serious mistake that had terrible consequences. But the President of the United States compounded that mistake, and I believe broke federal law. And I understand the President has a lot of discretion. But by law, he couldn't have released these five prisoners first without notification. But there's a more overriding law. This is giving aid and comfort and support to terrorists. That is a federal statute, and it's broadly interpreted, and that's what this president did, knowing that many of those five, even though they're being monitored and their year is fast approaching, that'll be up. Many of them go back and engage in other terrorist activities, even though we have ways to monitor what they're doing in terms of their communications. That is giving aid and comfort to the enemy. It's breaking a federal statute regarding terrorism. Read the law. I've read it, not recently. It's rather broad. And that's what this president, this commander-in-chief, was doing. He broke the law. And Congress is not doing a thing about it. There is a long list growing longer and longer and longer by the day of the crimes of this president, breaking the law over and over again. And this is one of the more serious actions. The same thing with Benghazi, because that involved the shipment of arms out of Libya using the Central Intelligence Agency, shipping those arms, including surface-to-air missiles that can bring down airliners as well as military jets, helicopters, that ultimately got into the hands of the so-called Free Syrian Rebels, but ultimately got in the hands of who? Al-Qaeda and what is now the Islamic State. That's just another charge that should be in the Articles of Impeachment. But we have a gutless, I really want to use an expression, but I can't. We have a gutless leadership in both the Republican House and the Senate that won't go after the president on this. Oh, they'll look at Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's emails. But the fundamental point, the fundamental basic question in regards to Benghazi is, why was the Central Intelligence Agency over three dozen personnel in Benghazi? What's the history there? Why were they first in Libya? Why were they in Benghazi? What were they doing? They're engaged in a covert operation to first gather up weapons as well as intelligence, train fighters, and then ship the weapons and fighters first to Turkey, then to Syria to the rebels. Now, what's the problem with that? During the time this was happening, it was against the law to do that. Oh yeah, there was a finding, and yes, the so-called Gang of Eight. Eight people in Congress needed to be notified, four Democrats, four Republicans, the House leadership, the Senate leadership, both the majority and minority, and the chairman and the ranking minority in the House and Senate Intelligence Committee. You see, that's the cover-up. Congress knew what was happening in Benghazi regarding the Central Intelligence Agency. That is the information that they won't look into. All the focus is on Hillary Clinton, the State Department, the annex, and the four Americans that were killed, and all of that is legitimate, but was not looked into is why the Central Intelligence Agency was there and what were they doing. Now, how is this related to Bo Bergdahl? What the president was doing there and what the president is doing here when he traded Taliban commanders in exchange for a deserter is supporting terrorism. That is a crime, ladies and gentlemen. It's still a crime. If you and I did it, we would be put in jail for a long time. Yet we have a gutless Republican leadership that won't focus an investigation on the criminal activities, the illegal activities, on constitutional activities of President Barack Obama. Mainly because they say if we impeach the first black president, the media will go crazy. That's true, but that's not the point. Just like these soldiers swear an oath of office to defend, preserve, and protect the United States Constitution and its laws, so do these representatives and senators. And when we have a president that's out of control, and he is out of control, that is engaging in illegal activities across the board, not only in Benghazi, here in immigration, there's a long list of items. Think of it as if you were writing a bill, articles of impeachment, there's a long list of items that can be on that. In other words, the president can be indicted for multiple crimes. And the reason why I say he's out of control, it's abundantly clear to me that the White House and the president understand that his presidency has been an unmitigated disaster, both in the economics field and in foreign policy, and much of what he's done will be undone. Might take time. So he has decided to not be constrained. He'll do what he pleases. And whether that's illegal, unconstitutional, doesn't matter to him. Ladies and gentlemen, that is a very dangerous situation. There was a reason I was, initially when I came in today, I wasn't going to give this show. But I was eating lunch when I heard the news story that the Army, breaking news story, that the Army was going to court-martial Bo Bergdahl, Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. So I switched gears because I was finally applauded the Army because I was very skeptical whether the leadership in the Army had the courage to stand up to the commander-in-chief. Why command pressure is not legal, it doesn't mean it doesn't happen. And you better believe there was a lot of command pressure, starting with the president on down, not to do this. But the senior people in the military know that this simply cannot stand. This is not an ambiguous case. There's a lot of evidence here. And it's compounded by the problem that this president traded five terrorists, Taliban commanders that we had captured and imprisoned that we knew would go back. We have a history here of the people that we've released who have gone back and then reengaged and became terrorists. It's a high percentage, 25, 30%, some would say more. We already know that at least one, maybe two of the five released. That's what's happening. Now, they're not telling, the government's not going to tell the names, but you can read between the lines. We have the military, actually, we have the signals intelligence capability through the National Security Agency, as well as other foreign intelligence agency, to monitor any communications that we're aware of and determine what the intentions or plans of these five Taliban commanders that were released, these prisoners that were released for this deserter, that in and of itself was a crime by the president. And the president had other options. There were at least two others that were being considered that didn't involve the trading of five Taliban prisoners. A lot of this is coming out and will come out in the next days, weeks, and months. I fear for my country because I sincerely believe, and I've watched this president real closely. Ladies and gentlemen, he's not incompetent. I always get the argument, well, maybe they're just clueless and incompetent. They don't know what they're doing. I wish it was, but it's not. It's deliberate. As much as I don't hate, but I detest the actions of this president, he's an intelligent human being. These actions are very much deliberate, and they're tainted by years of indoctrination in an ideology. Actually, I think several ideologies of the far left. And that could be a separate show as who has influenced this president. Most of them are communists, Stalinists, Marxists, terrorists, bombers, left-wing professors, and the Muslim Brotherhood. That'll warp anyone's mind, especially if you're young and believe it. And this president believed it. And we're seeing the consequences today of that ideology in the decisions that this president's made. And we have a gutless Republican leadership that won't do the right thing. And the right thing and the remedy under the Constitution when you have a president that is exceeding his authority under the Constitution is to impeach him. They simply won't make the case. They won't do the investigation, and they won't make the case. And there's an ample case to be made, an ample case, because they don't want to be accused of impeaching the first black president. And they're afraid that the media will crucify him. Yeah, the media will crucify you if you don't make the case. And history will crucify you when it comes out that you knew what he was doing, and they know what he's doing. President Obama doesn't fear Congress. He's decided he's going to do what he wants to do, and it doesn't matter what the law says. We have a lawless president, and we have a Congress that won't use its own authority to try to rein him in. And that's to impeach him, slow him down. He has 21 months more in office, and in 21 more months, he can do an awful lot of damage, an awful lot of damage. And I believe he deliberately is intending to do that. Whatever he wants to do, he's going to do. He doesn't care what the law says. He frankly doesn't care what the press says. And he could care less whether it hurts the American people or not. He has an unconstrained vision that, by God, he's going to implement. And if that means the United States is weaker or in danger from its enemies, he doesn't care. That's what he's about. And he's making our country weaker. He is demoralizing our people. And he lies about it every day. You see, I was going to do a show about trust and the importance of trust. We have a president, because of his integrity and character problems, is simply not trusted by the vast majority of American people, both Republicans, Democrats, Independents, and people of other political affiliation, including people that really are on the left that also don't trust him. And if you don't trust someone, you can't believe what he says, and you don't negotiate with him, you really have as few dealings with him as possible. Tomorrow I'm going to do a show on trust. And I almost did it today, but I'm looking at the clock, and I have a little time, so I'll give you a tease as to what it's going to be about. I was listening to the news, and yes, the breaking story was the Army is going to court-martial Bergdahl, but this one, I almost fell out of my bed listening to it, eating lunch. Everyone is thinking, I was thinking along these lines, that at some point, whether it's the end of this March or June, sometime in the near future, the President of the United States and his Secretary of State, John Kerry, were going to have to provide Congress, as well as the American people, the details of the so-called negotiated deal with the Islamic Republic of Iran. And many people, including me, have said, show us the deal, because there's every indication that it's a terrible deal. So show us the deal. Show us the details. And that means show us the written document. What did you sign, Mr. Secretary, and what did the Iranian officials sign? Show us the document. Show us the specifics. Now, usually in these kind of arrangements, part of it is public, and you always have parts of it that aren't. But we, the American people, as well as our representatives and senators, are expecting, under the Constitution again, to be informed as to what you agreed to. And if it's not acceptable, Republicans and Democrats, both in the House and the Senate, will make it very clear to the president, as well as very clear to the Islamic Republic of Iran, that is a dictatorship run by religious fanatics that are trying to accelerate what I call the end days, the Armageddon, the second coming, by engaging in terrorist activities. And because of that, as far as I'm concerned, you shouldn't be negotiating with them at all, because you can't trust them. But the latest coming out is there may not be a written agreement. Let me say that again. There probably won't be a written agreement. In other words, it's a handshake. We'll tell you what we think we've agreed to. Are you out of your mind? Are you crazy? First of all, you shouldn't be negotiating with terrorists, and that's what they're doing, especially terrorists that have killed hundreds of Americans, American soldiers. And that's a fact, because many of those mines that were sent in Iraq exploded under vehicles that killed American soldiers, men and women, and severely wounded them. And our veterans across the land that survived are in veterans' hospitals, and many of them are committing suicides every day because of that experience. And you're negotiating with them? Oh, yeah, he's negotiating with them. He's unconstrained, folks. He's going to do, our president is going to do what he wants to do. And apparently, at least until he's out of office, no one in power, namely our Congress, is going to challenge him. He should be challenged. He is being challenged on talk radio, and also by people running for office. And that's well and good, but he's still getting away with it. He's still destroying this country. There's over 30 to 50 million minimum illegal aliens in this country. Now, most of them come to work, but many of them are criminals, primarily engaged in human smuggling as well as the drugs. And they have gangs and distribution networks all over the country, and that's just the highlights of it. But many of them are also foreign agents, terrorists from many countries that are penetrating this country by crossing the U.S.-Mexican border or coming to this country on a visa and then overstaying it. We have open borders. We do not have secure borders, and the president won't prosecute them. He wants this. You see, illegal immigration has consequences in terms of crime and our national security. And it's only a matter of time before we have another major terrorist event in this country. And who is the president and the secretary of state negotiating with? The number one instigator of terrorism, not only in the Middle East, but throughout the world. And we're supposed to take their word on it? And you have no written agreement? Just an agreement on tangibles or intangibles? I heard that and I said, that's unbelievable. That's the only thing I could think of. It's unbelievable. Are they serious? Apparently they are. Now, why do you think they say that? They don't want to show the American people whatever deal they've concluded. I think at this point, they're hoping the Iranians will walk away. President Obama and Secretary Kerry can save some face, what little face that's left. Because I truly believe if they have to spell out in writing what the agreement is between the United States and the Islamic Republic of Iran, there will be such a hue and cry from the American people that the House and the Senate, Republicans and Democrats, would finally have to stand up and stop this president. Finally. So we have a pattern here, and that's why you need to be able to connect the dots. Of the president of the United States betraying his oath of office and engaging in activities that if you and I did them, we would go to jail. They're criminal, felony, serious crimes. You do not provide any form of support or assistance to terrorists. That's a federal statute, and it doesn't exempt anybody, including the president, commander-in-chief. And if he wants an exemption, he has to get one, and he doesn't have it. This story is bigger than Bo Bergdahl on many levels, because the soldiers that were killed searching for him, as well as those that were wounded searching for him, all have families that were affected. Did the president meet with these families on the White House lawn when he had that photo op with the parents of this deserter Bo Bergdahl? No, he did not. He thought, and his people thought, this was perfect opportunity. The president has recovered Bo Bergdahl after 5 years. He had other ways to do it. He didn't mention that. But to do it, he traded one American deserter and gave back to the enemies abroad 5 known confessed terrorist Taliban commanders that will go back terrorizing in the Middle East. That is stunning, folks. And then we had then Ambassador Susan Rice. She's now, I think, National Security Advisor, going on television saying that Bo Bergdahl served with honor and distinction in Afghanistan. Susan Rice is not stupid. She's not ignorant. She's not stupid. She is a liar, like the president, but she has this. She's a woman, a black woman. She's articulate, somewhat charming, and there's a natural desire to believe what she says. Remember, this is the same woman that lied about Benghazi with the fairy tale about the video causing the demonstration that turned into an attack, when they knew at the literally why it was happening, that was in a terrorist attack, and it had nothing to do with the video. That's the same lady that went on 5 shows, and when Bergdahl was released, said that he served with honor and distinction. She knew or should have known that the Army had done a thorough and complete investigation, and there were strong suspicion that he was a deserter, and people died and were wounded searching for him. But the harm was, the insult was, the people on active duty knew he was a deserter. Veterans knew he was a deserter. The majority of the American people knew he was a deserter. And Susan Rice, true to form, lied, misled, insulted the intelligence of the American people, and especially those in the military, both past, current, and really future. Another disgusting, shameful performance by the Obama administration, and it's one of its lying spokesmen, former Ambassador Susan Rice. And to answer a question Bill O'Reilly asked, no, she's not a moron. She's worse than a moron. A moron, I could forgive. Someone with that intelligence, I can't forgive. Because that was more than insulting. That was hurtful. And there are many ways she could have softened that, but she didn't. She rubbed it in. He didn't serve honorably. Just the opposite. His conduct, his behavior was dishonorable. He deserted his own team. He betrayed his own oath of office. He gave aid and comfort to the enemy. He gave information to the enemy that resulted in the deaths and wounding of his fellow soldiers. So just as the New York Times reporter and the editors who probably read the story, let me make it clear, he's not going to get an honorable discharge. Far from it. He should be executed for desertion and defection. He won't be, but he should be. And the American people are increasingly losing patience with a president who is taking this country very much in the wrong direction and in the process trying to destroy it from within and without. It's time for Congress, like the United States Army, to stand up to this president and impeach him. That would keep him busy for the next 21 months. And that would be an opportunity to educate the American people for the dozens of well-substantiated charges that this president is engaged in illegal behavior and unconstitutional behavior, just like Bo Bergdahl did as a private in the United States Army in a combat situation on a remote outpost in Afghanistan. It's time for Republicans and Democrats to remember they swore an oath of office. They need to honor that oath of office, take serious that oath of office, and do what the Constitution demands in this situation. And that is, after a thorough and complete investigation by the House and the Senate, just like the Army did a thorough and complete investigation of Bo Bergdahl, come to the sad conclusion that the president of this United States, yes, the first black president, there is more and more grounds that he should be impeached. And that isn't an indictment. That is not a conviction. It's a very high bar to both impeach and convict. And it should not be done lightly because it's very much a political decision. But the American people and this country needs to be defended. And we're relying on our representatives in the House and the Senate to defend this country against a president and commander-in-chief that unfortunately, like Bo Bergdahl, has deserted and betrayed this country. And that is a serious charge that requires serious leadership. But more importantly, it requires a certain amount of courage from people that know what I say is true, but won't pursue it. Won't pursue it. They simply keep their mouths shut, partly because some of the leadership was involved in these crimes. With that, I need to close the show. Tomorrow, I'll talk about trust and why it's important, especially in regards to the negotiations with the Islamic Republic of Iran regarding nuclear weapons. Thank you for listening, and now America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College.